To see examples of what we talked about on this episode, along with further information, go to bunchofdorks.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to
Two Dimension Podcast,
the comic book podcast
with no direction.
I was telling Al, I says, well, if we're going to do 150, we should get all your friends back.
Oh, God. The best part is...
Please tell me that's the most popular episode.
The best part about the drunk episode was that somebody lost the last half of the episode where he was so drunk.
Really?
He ended up in the bathroom. Are you recording this right now? Yeah. Beautiful. He ended up on the bathroom floor. Puking his guts out. Had to call his wife to come and get him.
Pissed. She had to come pick me up.
The rest of us left him there and went out drinking. We hadn't had enough. We killed off, what, 2 bottles of whiskey, I think?
Yeah, we did.
And of course, the best part of it all is guess who was pouring the shots? Dallas.
One for me, one for him. One for me.
Dallas was pouring shots all the way up to the rim. He was bubbling the rim and making people drink them. And I mean, we were so drunk, it was unbelievable.
And Dom, me and you left, right? We left.
Yeah.
You guys got out when the getting was good.
Yeah, and you. I think we did like half hour, 45 minutes as a crew.
Yeah.
And then like we did another hour and a half drunk. Okay.
That one guy was really funny though. He was the guy that worked for Orkin.
Oh, Matt.
He was one of the funniest guys.
Jesus.
He had an understated way of saying it, but he cracked me up. And then a friend of mine that listened to the show, Gene. You guys remember Gene?
Yep.
Yeah.
She was talking about, it says, I listened to the whole show. It says, I had to kind of force myself to listen to parts of it. It says, but I have to admit, I laughed a few times. And it was always Matt.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And I remember Dallas just saying, you know what upsets me is I lost 3 hours of the show. And then when I listened to it, I'm thinking, maybe you did a good favor.
Personally, I think that's a very convenient, I quote-unquote, lost that part of the show.
And ladies and gentlemen, we're proud to say that we are not going to do that in this episode. No. Welcome to Two Dimension Comics,
and
episode number 150. And I'm your host, Dallas Busha. So we've got a nice big fat round table for our 150th episode. We have...
It's Rook, baby!
Don.
Al.
Hash Brown!
Yay! Woo-hoo! So we've got the core crew back, all of us together, and we also have Hash Browns. This is his final episode that he's going to be recording with us for a while, because he's moving out to Texas to work for a while.
Woo-hoo!
At least a couple years.
What part?
Right outside Texas A&M.
Okay.
I'm doing a remodel on some apartments out there, so...
Oh,
yeah.
Cool.
Good benefits, so yeah, taking it up.
You may not want to come back. Texas is pretty awesome.
No, I definitely want to come back. I got too much family out here.
And he's got a little baby.
Hey, congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations, woo! Ben.
Yep. So
some good benefits for him, though. I mean, they're even flying you back to see the fam every, 2 weeks?
Yeah, every 2 weeks.
Nice.
Yes, I think that's awesome.
Oh, that is nice.
They're paying for, like, everything for him.
This is
a dream deal for him. He's going to just bank money.
Yeah. He's got to work for, 6-7 hours a day, get paid for 8, and then not have to worry about anything else.
Oh,
awesome deal. We're going to miss the hell out of him, though.
I'm going to miss you guys, too.
Yeah, I'm already crying.
Well, hey, it's radio, man.
One thing to bring up, Roddy Frey asked on the Facebook page, I guess to start off, how do we meet? How do we all meet? So
okay.
I'm going to pass that on to Dallas.
I think this is a fantastic topic for a 150th episode. All right, so let me start off back in the Dark Ages. There was a time back in the 20th century.
The group.
1987, the summer of 1987, I moved here from St. Louis, Missouri. And I was starting the second grade, and... I didn't know anybody. Hadn't met anybody yet. And Rook was the first person that I met at my school.
Interestingly enough, our moms worked together.
That's right. And I think actually that's how we met before we started going to school together.
Our mothers pushed us together and were like, hey, I work with this really nice lady. She's got a son your age. And you were living like right, like a block over.
The next street, literally the next street over.
Yeah,
we're
the
actually
next block over.
The same that we had, at that time, our street had the same name. Yeah, was just the by right. street in the middle of it.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I could walk to your house in like 2.5 minutes. Mm-hmm. So we would. So we, Rook and I, have known each other, like I've talked ad nauseum on the show, for you know, the better part of 20 years. Well, 30 years almost.
30 years almost. Yeah, dude.
30 years next
30
year.
30 years. My God.
So we're old, and I mean, we've been hanging out. Playing video games together, playing. I bring over like a garbage bag full of G.I. Joes, you know, and
Transformers.
We'd have sleepovers.
Oh,
and
my
I think
God.
We got into comic books at the same time.
I got in comic books because of you.
Yeah.
You son of a bitch.
My first comic book that I think my first comic book was a Ninja Turtles comic, and it was at Comics and Games, or Comics and Fantasy, who
yeah.
Jim Johnson, who's been on the show before,
yes,
he runs
yes,
it.
Yes, yes, yes.
Anyway, so yeah, Rook and I, at around this roughly the same time, got into comic books, and we've been reading forever. Now I'm going to hand it off to Don. It's like hot potato.
Okay. Not really that interesting. I'm at work one day, and used to be before we were paperless, we had printers, and everybody had to print their work out. We were graphic artists.
And we make widgets.
And one time I went to get my my printouts, and I kept getting these printouts that said had these initials that looked like Drogba, and it ended up being Dallas. And he came over. And
the initials were DRBA, and everybody liked to call me Dr. Badass.
Dr. Yeah. Badass.
said,
no one called you that. You just did
that. Okay, one person.
But then this guy came up with a t-shirt that said, I have a black belt and crazy. And I liked that. And I said, do you realize that your initials, every time I see it, I think of the soccer player that plays in England called Didier Drogba. And Dallas like, is he good? Yeah, he's really good. Well, okay, then. And then he went back to his desk, you know.
Sounds like
that was it. And every once in a while we talked. It was always about music, about bands. Dallas was a guitar player. He talked to other people at work that play guitar. And he and I would trade CDs.
Yes, this was in the dark ages of CDs before.
Yeah.
Before everything was digital.
Yeah, God, it just changed so quickly, you know.
And Don and I, this is back in 2006, just for history buffs.
I think it was early, wasn't it before that?
06 is when I started the Widget Factory.
Mm-hmm. You almost said the name.
But anyway, one day I was talking to a friend of mine because he told me about a podcast called Fanboy Radio, which I really enjoyed. They brought in a lot of major creators. They had Alan Moore, you know, they had Neil Adams, they had, you know, you name it. I really enjoyed listening to it. And one day they had Lynn Wein. And I'm walking with my friend telling him, and Dallas was always walking outside at break, talking on the phone to his fiance, his current wife, or only wife. I didn't mean it that way. The girl that he ended up marrying.
Baby, he screws up, I think she'll bury him.
Yeah. Don't, because you got to keep her. But he said, you know, he was always on the phone talking to her, and I was just telling my friend about how much I was enjoying this Lynn Wein interview, and I was trying to explain to my friend who Lynn Wein is. And I said, he's the guy that created, you know, a Swamp Thing, you know, co-created. And I was bringing up all these other books he wrote. And Dallas got off the phone looking at me. Said, are you talking about Lynn Wein? How do you know Lynn Wein? I was really shocked. And that's how he and I became friends.
And the rest is history.
And then for years, he and I would talk about podcasts. And Dallas would always say, hey, Don, let's do a podcast. And all I think is, oh, God, that'd be a train wreck.
And here's the train wreck, 150 episodes later.
I just kept thinking it would be like, you know, Chris Farley when he'd interview people on Saturday Night Live. You know, hey, you remember when? That was awesome.
Remember or when Beavis you were the Beatles?
Yeah. Or Beavis and Butthead. X-Men, yeah. There you go.
X-Men.
And I was just, get away from me. I'm not doing a podcast. I don't have time
actually,
to do a podcast.
You just kind of described our show.
But and, for some reason, he likes it now.
And like I said, that was it for years. And then I'm going to pass it on to Al.
Okay.
Go.
All right. We were at the Widget Factory. And I guess we were having like this big old round table getting to know you thing where we get to know everybody, and everybody was supposed to give a write on a piece of paper something that you've done that nobody knows that you did, like, you know, you invented something or you
murdered,
you know,
someone,
yeah, yeah, that or whatever.
Yeah, I know.
So, you know, everybody has to write something. So I wrote down, I drew a comic book. Nobody, I thought nobody knew that. So we're going around, and as we're going around, one guy goes, "Yeah, you know, I was a pilot, or I, you know, I."
I like how you offhandedly, "Yeah, I was a pilot."
Yeah, I was a pilot. Or,
I saved the world.
Yeah, I was a cat juggler. You know, whatever.
Cat juggler. Wow, that's
so you're supposed to guess. So somebody goes, "I drew a comic book," and Don didn't guess. It was some other guy, you know, Dan. Dan guessed. Close. Don, Dan, or whatever. So you know, I go, they go, "Who did it?" And Dan goes, "Al." And he goes, "Yeah, it was me." So they guess it. So it goes all around. And I forgot, Don, they didn't even say yours, right? There was like the dude didn't even give your secret.
You're supposed to write it down on a piece of paper, and the guy went and got everybody. So mine was on the table, and he missed it. And I didn't tell him because the guy was a jerk. But he wrote everybody's names up, and everything that was on there, everybody attested it to me. One guy said I was a pilot for the F-16 Hornets, you know, in the military.
Don.
And then I learned to play guitar from Stevie Ray Vaughan. Don. I drew a comic book. Oh, I know, that's Don Moore, because the person said it did the typesetting for my first comic way back.
Yeah.
But then, towards the end, all of a sudden, they're like, "This isn't adding up." And then the guy at the board was getting a little, "This isn't adding up." And I finally said, "Well, you didn't take my strip." "Oh." And he took it. I said, "Well, it's too late now. Everybody's going to know me." And then he said, "Oh, I'll take care of it." And he wrote 7 different things. One was, "I was a poet laureate." Who's going to believe that?
Done.
I finally got to mine, and it was the most obvious thing in the world. And of course, you know, it was
basketball
stupid.
Player, right?
Yeah, I'm 6'6". So, of course, if you say have basketball against poet laureate and all these other stupid things, of course, they're going to say basketball. Somebody's, "Yeah, he's tall, basketball." So, anyway, go ahead, Al, finish
so,
up.
So, yeah, so as soon as everybody knew who everybody was, what their secret identity or the secret thing was, Donk walks right up to me and he goes, "Do you really draw a comic book?" I go, "Well, yeah, it was in the late 80s, and it was one of these independent things." And it's like, "You're into comics?" Yeah, so
it was only once that I never saw her.
Of course, we became friends. And this is the interesting thing about my life. I would say that not everyone, but I would say the majority of my friends, maybe more than 70%, it's been through comic books.
Oh, yeah.
We either, at school, we mentioned comic books, or we just introduced to somebody, "Hey, he likes comics, too." It's really weird and funny how many people that are friends of mine, it's all the that's why we stick together as friends, because there's a weird bond between comic book fans, you know, geeks, whatever you want to talk about, where it's like, yeah, we're in the club.
Yeah, right. My nerd matches your nerd.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but if you were like, you know, you like motorcycles, a lot of your friends are probably, you know, be the type of
and
people like motorcycles.
Possibly,
you know?
Too. Possibly.
Or if you're, like, you're right.
Or if you like fishing or, you know,
possibly too, but it's like comic books is more of a special, it was more of a generalized, smaller group or whatever, but it's like the majority of them, you know?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's kind of
weird.
Well,
yeah.
And then, because you get something to talk about. You've always got something, you know, to talk about, as opposed to you meet somebody who's a lawyer or who's a doctor, and you go, "Oh, yeah, what do you do?" "Well, I put on a white glove," or, you know, whatever, you know? But it's like, "Oh, yeah, comic books." There's always something to talk about, something to connect with throughout the ages.
Yeah,
I'm trying to remember exactly how you and I met.
We were working at night.
We worked together. I didn't work nights.
We met through Don.
Yeah, our paths crossed every now and then.
We did.
I'd say hi.
You were always very nice. He was, "Hey, how you doing?" And I'm like, "Hi, who
I'm like
are
a,
you?"
I'm like a bubbly dude walking around work.
You know, Dallas doesn't
the
do this,
guy.
But when I picture Dallas, I always picture like you know Barney and the Flintstones? He'd always walk around, "Oh, scoo-dooby-doo-dee-dee, hey," you know? And that's how I always picture Dallas. He's always upbeat. He's always bright, no matter what.
Well, I got to tell the Dallas story that I told you. Here's one of the few times that I knew you, but we didn't really know. Imagine we didn't know each other. There was a time towards, like, in the middle of my widget factory career where, like, I used to work at night, but they decided they were going to change the hours. So instead of coming in at 4:30 and staying until 1, you'd come in at 3:30 and stay till 12:30. So I remember one day I walked in and I sat right in the front and I found the chair, empty seat. You were sitting, you probably don't even remember, you were sitting across from me And then,
you know, hey, asshole, what's my chair?
Yes! I'll tell you the story.
Oh, no!
I'll tell you the story. You remember, don't you? You know, Claudia sat there and Maria sat. I think Maria, anyway. So one day I'm sitting there and I'm working, you know, everything's cool. And the next day I walk up, oh, there's my spot. There's no chair. And I'm looking around, I see that guy. I go, hey, have you seen my chair? And you're like, no, I haven't seen it.
I'm only sitting in it. It's okay.
It's like, well, it kind of looks like that one. He goes, well, all the chairs are alike. As I look around and I'm like, all right, so I got to go around. Like 5 minutes later, I grabbed the chair. That was the first time we ever talked to each other.
All right. And
you're
so
very nice.
So, and then I'm pretty sure Rook, I introduced Rook to you guys.
The first time I met them is actually the first episode.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, episode before.
We didn't record it.
No. We met before.
We had a meeting.
Right. We met beforehand just to see how we all clicked.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's right. We met before here. It was like the pre-episode one kind of meeting. And after that, I recorded episode one by myself. Al pre-recorded a review
of Creepy. Yeah.
And so I put it in there, and then that was the first episode. I think I was talking about The Adventures of Luther Arkwright.
Yeah.
And then, episode number two was the first one with all four of us on there, and that was probably the second.
Al was supposed to be there, but he missed the first two.
So you did like two or three.
I don't even know.
But what happened was Dallas and I were talking about going to MegaCon.
Yes.
And then we talked about maybe Al could come. So we went and found Al, and he wanted to come, so it was the three of us. And it was so much fun, you know, driving down. You know, we went to Orlando, which is maybe an hour or 30 minutes away. We stopped and had breakfast. And the conversation never stopped. And, I mean, it was everything. Just like we talk on the show, rock bands, you know, comic books, you know. And then it was the next day at work. Dallas said something, Don, let's do a podcast. You know, like he said many times. And I said, can Al do it? And he said, well, I was going to see if he wanted to do it too. Okay. And then he kept bringing up a friend of his. He said, do you mind if he comes? No, not at all. So we all met at Yancey Street. And as I said in a past episode, I was really scared of Rook. You know, I met him, and he's got this big motorcycle chain hanging off the side. You know, the
and an accompanying motorcycle.
And nice, when I say that, nice, very congenial, you know. And, I mean, I really enjoyed meeting him. But then after the shop, Dallas said, let's all go to his place. So Dallas, Al, and myself all get into economy cars. And Rook gets in this motorcycle all flashy with flames on the side, you know, and I'm thinking, why is he hanging out with us, you know? And we were here for, in Dallas's all day, we spoke for 8 hours, we talked about everything, comic books, comic book movies, what comics we didn't like, and we didn't know how to record an episode, and I thought, that would have been the greatest episode in the world.
We still don't.
We still don't, but I mean, at the time, we didn't have microphones, we were trying to figure out what to do.
Yeah. Oh, God, the first couple episodes, we recorded with, like, computer mics. Remember that headset
that I had? Yes.
Yeah, constantly.
Yeah. Well, I remember one of our first road trip episodes. It was a MegaCon. We had a ghetto Walkman.
We had, like, ghetto Walkman. We go, what do you got to say? Okay, you're on cassette tape.
On cassette tape, we recorded an episode.
That first road trip was what proved to us that we could actually do a podcast, because when we went back and forth and all we did was talk about comic books, you know, we said, yeah, we can do this. We can just sit there and talk about comics.
We realized there was no breaks. There was no real awkwardness. Like, we could just keep going.
Yeah.
You know, we all have enough knowledge and enough mutual respect to be able to do that.
And that was back when MegaCon was, like, tolerable. Last time we went, we couldn't even walk through the whole. Remember the last time we went? You didn't go, Dad. We couldn't even walk through the place.
Oh, yeah, this last time.
It wasn't the same as it was the first year. I mean, I'm sure it's always different. Every year we went was different. But I didn't go last year. I'm going to go this year. And, I mean, if all you guys are going, I'd be happy to go, because it's fun to go with your friends.
If we can get this guy over here.
Yeah. Well, we went to the Yancey convention.
Yeah.
That was one of my favorite.
I did the Green Lantern cosplay.
That was great.
Why don't they have another one? They were going to have some other conventions.
Steve's doing like 100 different things at one time, man. So.
Well, he should
do another
this
store,
one.
Right?
Yeah, they got a Tampa store as well.
So. All right. Now, so as an added bonus, how did,
you want me to tell how I met this guy?
Rook and Hash Browns. Let's hear it. Let's hear it.
So,
hi, I'm Hash Browns, and I was an alcoholic.
Was?
I don't drink as much as I used to.
Neither of us drink as much as we used to.
At least episode 50.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been 100 episodes, so you can prove that. So, many moons ago, my wife and I hung out at a nightclub downtown Newport Richey.
The DTL.
The downtown lounge.
Yeah, baby.
We pretty much became the promoters for the place. We set up different weird, odd little parties and stuff like that. And
yeah, we used to play there in my band.
Yep, you guys used to play there.
Which band?
And that was Realize and Realize. In the Dim.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Primitive Astronauts would play there. But Billy was one of the guys that hung out at the club. I remember him in the background, vaguely. I was very drunk a lot when I was there. Okay. There was a lot of stuff going on. You know, people thinking I owned the place from high school, trying to get in for free. So, all kinds of stupidity. But I remember particularly the one night I truly first started to remember Billy, as I'm standing out front with the actual owner of the club. And I'm out there talking with him. And this kid walks up to me and goes, "Hey, your girlfriend's looking for you." And I turned and looked at him. Now, he interrupted a very deep conversation about some future plans and promotions for the club. And I remember looking at him thinking to myself, I'm like,
"Who are you?
That's fucking nice. What do you want?" I looked at him and went, "Yeah, okay. You can tell her I'll be there in a minute." Oh, and he walks away. That's the first time I truly remember.
And a friendship is born.
Well, no, actually, the friendship was born because of MySpace. I was doing something one
day.
Damn,
MySpace.
Yeah. I was doing something one weekend.
You were moving your comic books from where you were living to the storage unit.
Yeah, so it all started with comics, didn't it? Uh-huh. Holy shit. Yeah.
Yep.
It all does, man. This is all during the time of, you know, getting ready to buy a house and engagements and stuff like that. And I put a post up about, "Yo, you know, anybody that's got some free time, I really need a hand doing this, you know, hit me up." The only person to show up is the bald kid from the club.
And he's like, "Great. None of my friends, just this random guy.
Okay, so random, "Hey, your girlfriend's looking for you, dude," shows up to help, and I'm like, "All right, whatever."
Why do you guys have the best story out of all of us?
Oh, it gets funnier. So, from there on, it's like every time I needed help doing something, or I'd say, "Oh, anybody hanging out, anybody want to do this or that?" This guy would show up.
Oh, it's become a running joke at this point.
Oh, yeah. It's,
we were joking about it when you first got here.
I know. Who the hell is going to help me clean my garage again next weekend?
Yeah.
Not you, apparently.
No.
he'll fly out from Texas and...
Yeah, that one... No. That every other weekend, you have to come help me clean my garage.
No. I have a baby. I have a wonderful excuse not to clean the garage ever again.
Hey, congratulations, by the way, too. You know, it's the first time I saw you. We went over to Rook's to do an episode, and you were helping Rook put up his door.
Yeah.
Yeah, every time I go over there, you're helping Rook. Yeah, and there was one time you guys were doing some of gutters or something.
Yeah.
Okay, but I gotta ask a question.
Okay.
How'd you get the nickname?
Okay,
hey,
so
it's
there's
your turn.
There are many different variations of what happened, but when you start breaking it down to the core people that were there that were not as drunk as I was.
By the way, this is an after effect of the club days at Downtown Lounge.
It was an after a Downtown Lounge event. I think the sun was starting to come up at some point. And we were hungry, so we wanted breakfast.
It was the KY Deity Show, wasn't it?
Yes, it was the KY Deity Show. So the bands and us, the band was staying with us, went to go to IHOP. Get there.
IHOP was the common ritual after the club.
Sure.
Okay,
yeah.
Everybody went to IHOP.
Sure.
The bartenders, the bouncers,
so
the
all,
owners.
They all knew
everybody,
everybody there knew us.
Sure.
And I ordered, very drunkenly, I wanted hash browns. And I wanted it smothered, covered. You know, I wanted a Waffle House hash browns that was massive and delicious and crispy. And they brought me this pile of soup. I picked up said pile of soup, walked into the kitchen, slapped it on the grill, and started cooking my own ass.
That's awesome.
No one said anything. They just kind of...
Now, mind you,
and I scooped it back on my plate when it was done cooking.
At this hour at night, we're usually the only people in IHOP, okay? And there's like 20 of us and one cook. There's 20 drunks.
So what's he going to do?
There's 20 drunks, one cook, two waitresses, and this guy just walks back into the kitchen and throws his shit back on the grill.
That's great.
The cook is busy. He has 19 other people to cook for. He doesn't care.
He's like, have at it, buddy. Hey, we do this order too?
I'm glad I asked.
Well, the part of the story also goes, now, depending on who you talk to, that he was... Now, I don't really remember... Either I was too drunk to remember, or I wasn't there. I don't know what happened that
night. You were there, but you left early.
Oh, okay. I left before this incident.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Some people report that Billy stood in the doorway of the kitchen screaming, I want some mother effing hash browns. What is this crap?
I think I said that as I was walking in. I don't think I was just standing there screaming.
Others tell me that he sat there at the booth talking about hash browns nonstop until that appeared in front of him and he got furious. I heard one report.
This is like a mythical story.
I heard one report that says he walked into IHOP right from go screaming, I want mother effing hash browns. So this is how hash browns came to be.
My God.
I wanted hash browns. I don't know. It's not even my favorite food. I like hash browns. They're good.
Yeah,
all things to get nicknamed.
Yeah,
that's great. Since the Downtown Lounge days, very few people call me hash browns. And the
funniest part is the people that were there that night, right, are the ones that when they see him scream, motherfucking hash browns!
And it's happened to me. I've been in Orlando, Kissimmee, all the way to south as Fort Myers, and I will just be somewhere and I will hear, motherfucking hash browns! Oh, dear God, someone remembers me.
You need to get a shirt. Yeah. You need to get a shirt. Market it.
So Roddy, there you go. There's the history of the group.
just get a restaurant called
Mother F.
At one point, I actually went to the courthouse and filed a petition for me to have my name changed
you
to
motherfucking hash browns. Shut up, you did not.
I had the paperwork, I had the fee, and the lady at the counter was like, look, Usually I don't talk people out of doing stupid things because people can do stupid things. You need to rethink your decisions on life. I'm like, what? I want it.
Oh, it's
like, go home and think about it. And I went home and I thought about it and I was like, you know what, maybe I don't want my actual name to be motherfucking hash brown. What's your first name, mother?
Music break.
Yeah.
It's Don.
Don's sitting there going, Don's done. Ladies and gentlemen,
like this guy.
Here's some music for you.
Nobody knows, we live in fucked up times. I think it's time for a rise above the politics. The injustice and the lies. Give up decision, it's a burden of education. They take away our liberties and change the constitution. We need a change for better and for worse. Unite and fight for a way of life. We are the voice of American youth. We are the voice that you don't deserve. We are the voice of the lost and forgotten self. And the words and the lies that is what take the power. We are the voice. We are the voice. We the people, fed up with lies. Politicians that are fake, but hiding disguise. Slime is seen on
You can hear our most recent 20 episodes on iTunes. If you would like to hear our older episodes, you can find them on our blog. Just go to bunchofdorks.com and click on the Cyclops.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, was The Horribles with the song The Voice. I know somebody wanted to talk about politics earlier, but that's as political as we'll get on this show with that song.
What? Why is everybody looking at me?
I think I just said, we can't get past what we just heard.
Before we get into comics, Don and I had a question, which maybe you know you guys can answer. On the way up here, we saw like a deserted fast food place. Was there Crystal Burgers around here that went out of business?
Mm-hmm. Yes, there was.
It was a Crystal's. Okay.
Yeah, right on 19. Mm-hmm. Yeah, on the left hand side.
Mm-hmm. So how long ago did it go out of business?
A couple years ago.
5 years ago?
Oh, that long ago? Okay.
Yeah, it's been longer. Gone quite a while.
We thought so, because that's like, if it would have come up
like,
here...
Like, you can tell it's a Crystal Burger, totally.
Yeah, Don said it. We when we came up here, Don goes, that looks like a Crystal Burger. I go, yeah, you know, it's been gone for a while, because I know if it would have been here when I was here, we would have stopped and had a Crystal Burger.
Yeah, because he's always talking about how mad he misses it.
Yeah, so, okay, yeah. Never mind then. Okay, bow on with the
Well,
show.
Thanks for not supporting Nell's favorite burger place.
Isn't there a Crystal Burger up in Spring Hill, Billy? No, that's gone.
She just said Hillbilly.
Hey, Hillbilly!
There's none in St. Pete either. There's Tampa one, so, anyway.
So,
anyway, comic books.
Yeah. Now, before we go into our reviews, I have a question I want to pose to you guys. And it's just a fun little thing we can talk about for a few minutes here, okay? First off, I want to say there was a website that I think it's called Vulture.com, and I think Al found a neat thing about Stan Lee, which we can talk about in a little bit. But I found a neat article on that website, and it actually loaded on my phone, surprisingly, unlike the Stan Lee article. But anyway, it's called Too Many Comics, Too Many Comics. And so, basically... The gist of it is that there's a crap ton of comics on the market these days, monthlies, okay?
Sure there are.
But a lot of them, and I'm specifically referring right now to just the big two, basically Marvel and DC, okay? Image Comics releases about 50 different books or different titles a month, but the majority of them are unrelated because they're creator-owned.
Sure.
That's fine. But Marvel and DC both have, let's see, DC releases about 40 titles or so a month. Marvel releases like 80 titles a month, okay? That's a lot of continuity. That's a lot of stuff to have to stick to, a lot of stuff to read. What are your guys' thoughts on that to keep up with all this stuff? Now, I know Rook, and I don't know how much you read current stuff, Billy, but like I know, Rook, you read a ton of stuff, and you have to keep up on a lot of stuff. So how do you guys feel about Marvel having 80 books on the shelf at all times every month and DC having 40?
Well,
like, that's a lot of stuff.
If you look through the old scans that we have of, you know, years ago we used to get these scans online that were complete Marvel Comics for like a year. They used to put out a ton of titles back then too. I mean, during the mid-70s, there was at least maybe, I don't know, 50 or more like that, including magazines and reprints.
And now,
it's called glutting the market.
No, you're right. And despite inflation, because I know when books were, say, 65 cents, that, you know, people weren't making nearly as much money. But still, the cover price of a book these days is $4.
Even though I think DC's reducing their cover
price.
They're
reducing their cover price to $3, which is great. Yeah, go DC.
Yeah,
that's
but they're
awesome.
Like drawing the line at $2.99.
Yeah,
that's
right.
That's what they did like a while back.
And now they're doing it again.
Yeah. No, to me, honestly, that big of a production of books on a monthly basis, you know what that is? That says to me that someone has taken a big old dump in their hand and they're thrown it at the wall and seeing how much of it will stick.
Seeing what sticks. Okay, no, that's true.
I mean, I'm sorry, but, you know, it's quality, not quantity. And the quality of the books is what I call into question. You know,
how much of that stuff is intertwined? Like when you have a big event book, when you have an event book,
you know what it is too. You know what it is too. It's that books now, Don will go test this. They have like a run of 15 issues. They stop And then another Silver Surfer comes out. So there's always like these short little runs of books coming
and
in.
They're and they're always number one.
And there's a lot of number ones that they never used to do back in the old days, you know. So there's a lot of number ones that keep doing, they keep cranking. I mean, I honestly feel that I would I'd love to see all these creators do comic books, but the quality and the quality does it seems to suffer, and you know you can't read all the books, you can't afford to get all of them.
And that's my problem is, now look, there's so much you can't afford all. And look, there's a lot of creators out there. There's a ton of artists, thinkers,
sure,
writers. Great they ones. Need jobs. They exactly. need stuff to do. You gotta give them a monthly book. That's fine. I get that. But when you have something like an event title where all these books are related and they're that's encouraging you to get all these books to read one story, that's where I think the problem lies.
They've always done that. That was starting.
You're right. And then they have always done that, especially Marvel and probably DC. You know, they really milk that.
Crisis.
It's, man.
Secret Wars.
We have.
Even the Kirby. The
if that's Crisis the style.
Crisis was really good, though.
Yeah, but it's still everything was. That was. Secret War started it
yeah.
in the 80s. Crisis was better, but it still was. Every book was linked together. But the reality was Marvel, that article with Stan Lee was talking about how they were one of the first ones to intertwine the Marvel Universe, so characters related to other ones.
Which was neat, yeah.
Batman and Superman did, yeah. but you had to buy a lot of books.
The Marvel, it was an amazing feat for them to do that back in the day, but they also didn't have 80 titles coming out.
No, they had 8.
Yeah.
So here's the problem. They're not intertwining the universe. Because if they were, how the F is Wolverine showing up in 15 different books?
Well, see, how the F is
Deadpool showing up in 20 different books? Okay? Because seriously, if you look at it, Spider-Man has 5 goddamn titles. Okay? So Spider-Man is having all these episodic battles, you know, with 20 different villains in 15 different locations
so really
across the globe. They're not writing intertwining stories. Okay? They're taking giant dumps, like I said, and whatever sticks, sticks. Whatever doesn't, falls off, and they try it again.
Now, you know, back in the day, Spider-Man had Web, Amazing, Spidey Super
Spectacular.
Story, Spectacular.
And you can't forget Peter Porker, the Spectacular
Peter
Spider-Ham.
Porker, the Spectacular
exactly.
Spider-Ham, or whatever. Yeah, you had all that stuff. I don't mind that sometimes they don't do intertwining stories. That's usually the summer blockbuster where something major is going to happen and everybody's got to fight and then it's going to be a big change to the universe and then they go back 2 years later and they take it back and they change it back to the way it used to be and all that kind of stuff. I can understand that. I don't mind that they have 80 titles, but here's another problem too. They not only do they have 80 titles, but they have variants of them too. So that's a lot more books than you would need.
Yeah, that's an issue too. Well, what you were saying, Rook, actually, I look at it in the opposite way. I'm kind of relieved if a lot of these books, if there's a ton of Spider-Man books that aren't related, because then I can pick and choose.
Exactly.
I don't feel compelled to have to buy all of them. I could say, oh, maybe this one's good.
Oh, I don't feel compelled to buy any of them.
Yeah, well,
okay. Well, yeah, but what I'm saying is the average reader who wants to keep up on a storyline or a continuity might feel compelled to buy all of them they all share.
And the casual reader is very important. You know, the guy that just walks up and, well, I'm going to give my son a book. Okay, this is beginning, middle, and end. Good. You know?
I still think 80 is a little much. I think that's
it
a lot
is,
of stuff,
it right? is. But Marvel has a lot of characters. How many X-Men are there? Like 9 million?
Well, according to, I'm reading this book, Necrotia, which is a collection of a bunch of X-Men. Good Lord, I can't follow it. I don't know any of these characters.
Yeah.
But has there ever been any time ever when you read comics you wish you could buy everything that a company put out?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
And I just, it's...
Unless you're a Marvel zombie.
Well, I'm sure there are some people that do that, but I mean, I like to get a lot of comic books, but I've never wanted to buy everything one company put out.
However,
if you could,
if they're encouraging you and saying you can't finish the story unless you read this book, and this book.
Yeah, well, still, if I don't like the creative team, I don't care what happened, I'm not going to read it.
Well, that's good. Mm-hmm. Hopefully there's a lot of readers like you.
Because if somebody just told me that I could have everything that, say, Marvel put out for free, you know, I says, if you want it, you can have all of it. Okay, I take some of it, and I just pass the rest of the stuff off to, you know, you guys. Sorry if you don't like it. But I keep thinking about going back and recooking your hash browns.
But look, it's a fucking Spider-Man.
But
no, all I wanted was a Spider-Man, and instead I ended up with Peter Porker. What is this crap?
I still remember at times where I'd go to the store after I bought my regular books and I wanted something else to read. And I'd just be looking through all these books, thinking, I'm really not interested. I'd wait till something else to come out. I mean, if they want, I guess my only problem with putting out so much stuff is it may be taking away shelf space for other books that I might like to see.
Well, back in the old days, you had the spinner rack, and every company was in the spinner rack. And, you know, sometimes I would want every comic book in there, but I couldn't afford them, you know. Yeah. But it was Marvel, DC, Dell, Gold Key, Tower, Archie, you know, whoever was putting out the books. Now when you go into a comic shop, boom, Marvel section, boom, DC section, and then an independent section, which is almost as big, but it's like, you know, you're sitting there and your eyes are like, you know, whoa, what do I want? And then the other thing that's pissing me off with the variants is you're picking up a book, you're seeing like Marvel or whatever, like Fantastic Four, and you say, oh, wow, that cover's by, you know, Fred Hembeck. Did he do this issue, or did Walt Simonson do the issue?
Yeah.
And I have always hated misleading covers. Covers by artists that didn't do the book.
See, now...
I always hated that.
Here's the thing that I want to talk about as far as covers real quick, though.
Oh, hey.
This cool project that Marvel's been working on.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Yeah,
in your face, Al.
Yeah, no, that's different.
The hip hop covers
thing
is really neat. I gotta tell you. You know, granted, it's got absolutely nothing to do with the storylines that are going on inside of it, but, you know, it's throwing hip hop culture into right there on the cover of the article of the comic book. I mean, this one's hilarious.
This is great.
The Doctor Strange, the Mystic. Yeah. You know, and it said Dr. Dre's The Chronic. You gotta love that.
And it looks just like the cover of The Chronic, but in the middle it's got Dr. Strange and Dr. Dre.
They all do, you know. And
it's just a comic book of covers?
It's just the covers. The Education of Kamala Khan.
Yeah, yeah.
And instead of the Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. You know, I mean, these are fantastic. You know, these are the homages to...
Well, that's different than what I'm
talking about. Classic hip-hop.
That's different.
But it's still misleading covers. It's still variant covers.
Yeah, this sounds like I'm being ironic or something. As opposed to like going through a book and seeing, oh man, what did Neil Adams do this issue? When you open it up, it was whoever. Yeah. You go like, oh, there's no Neil Adams in this.
Yeah, but I know DC's been doing that a lot. Like, and they have really nice covers. Like they had Darwin Cook do several of their covers, the sideways ones. Those were awesome, but
it pissed me off that he wasn't drawing the inside.
That's how I felt. I liked the covers a lot.
He's a busy man,
Mike Allred is doing a ton of Marvel and DC covers, and he hardly draws.
Nick Carty used to do all the covers. Neil Adams used to do all the covers, and you know it wasn't what was inside. But now, sometimes they hire one artist to do the whole run of. What was it? And I bought one of them because I liked it. Some Aunt Lucy, I think it was, did those pin-up girl covers for DC.
Yeah.
Well, I bought the Zatanna.
Vertigo used to do that too, like in late 80s, early 90s with Sandman. It was always Dave McKean covers. On Preacher, it was always a Glenn Fabry cover. Like, you'd always have one specific artist doing the cover of an entire run.
Yeah. That's pet peeve of mine, but whatever. Sells books.
It's BS to Al.
Well, it's BS to me.
I hated the variant covers in the 90s, and it didn't bother me now. I mean, I everything Al said is how I feel. I get disappointed thinking it's Darwin Cook and he's not on the inside. But it was the 90s is what I didn't like, because they'd have, you know, a four-issue series and four variant covers for each one. And people were working really hard at buying all 12 issues. And if you wanted to do it, that's fine. But I was in a store, and, you know, 90s comics were big. Everybody's thinking they need to start collecting. And there's a young boy, probably 10, 11 years old, and he was at the store with his parents. And he was explaining to the owner that he was wanting to start collecting comics, and can you help him? Well, the owner was trying to convince him to buy the Robin miniseries. It was a four-issue series
with
12 colors.
With five different covers on it.
Yeah,
I don't know. It was the one that had the hologram covers.
Was that what it was? No, that was the second Robin series. I was working at the comic shop then,
But, you know, when the owner was explaining, he was doing the whole, you know, used car sideshow thing, you know, hey, yeah, this is, you know.
Hey,
the mother said, it's only four issues and there's 12? And that's all she said, kind of, and he was just still doing that, you know, sidebar thing. And then finally, the boy made a comment, says, well, I want to get these to read. I don't want the same comic over and over. Mm-hmm. And the dad got excited and pulled him over to the side and says, listen, if you're going to get serious about this comic like thing, you need to listen to this guy because he knows what he's talking about.
No, he doesn't.
And I'm looking over behind the dad, looking, kid, I'm shaking my head, no, no.
No, kid, no.
And that's what I hated. You know, and the boy was right. You want to get the comic books to read. And all these people that got into comic collecting in the 90s, how many of them are still doing it? It was a speculator market. That's what I hated.
Well, and the worst part about the 90s, getting in the 90s, was all the, I mean, just, they were such high number runs of books, you know? You literally had hundreds of thousands of things. I mean, sitting on shelves, not moving at all. You know, it was ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. And some of the gimmick covers too. Oh my
god! Still have some.
The holographic bifold, gatefold, die cut. Yeah.
Man, my favorite Transformers was one of those hologram bifolds. It was amazing. Okay.
Don't get me wrong. Some of them were cool as crap. Okay.
Like it had Optimus Prime's head on the front, then it opened up, and you had just the giant. It was.
I agree that there were some really good ones. Like it was obviously gimmicky, tacky, but yeah, there were some good ones. I remember Wolverine number 50 had like three claw marks on the front.
My nephew had that.
Yeah.
And I saw that in the dollar box.
Oh yeah,
that was neat.
Was gimmicky.
Comic books back then, that was part of the charm. They were kind of gimmicky and tacky.
Yeah. Well, they just started going so far.
They did go far. They became gimmicky and tacky.
Yeah, you know. When the cover, when you were paying like $7-$8 because the cover was, you know, die printed, foiled with holographic, you know, pop out covers.
But what about those covers they have now where they're blank?
The blank covers I love.
But you're supposed to take it to an artist and have them
draw
it for you.
Yeah, at conventions.
That's going to cost you like $100, though.
I've never seen that.
Some of these guys some of the absolutely coolest shit to these covers.
We went to MegaCon the first time. There was a bunch of those blank covers.
Really?
It has the logo, say Avengers or
X-Men. You know what? I think I've seen them and I never understood the significance of them. I just thought maybe, here's an issue that maybe something, maybe it takes place in the snow or in a snowstorm.
On Facebook, a lot of these guys opposed the picture, some of the creators, and sometimes the person that got it. Like, say, if Rook went to MegaCon and he had that, and say he walked up to Mark Texiera and said, could you draw, you know.
Tex has done a few, I think.
And
I can see Rook saying, look, I've got 24 grand in my pocket. Do you ghostwriter on this?
Well, commissions is such a huge thing in the circuit and networking, in the comic industry these days, and I'm not surprised.
Oh, that is cool. Yeah, okay, see, all those blank covers,
see,
man.
It makes sense because it's such a big thing to do now is to get original art and to get commissioned art.
Yeah. You know, and it depends. Some of these guys are doing it for, you know, $50-$60. Others are doing it for, you know, $200-$300.
Yeah.
It all depends.
It depends on who you get. Well, also, speaking of gimmicky recent things is, I think it was last year or the year before, they were doing a lot of Marvel books were like action figure covers.
Yeah.
And they look like old Secret Wars characters.
They had the action figures, and then they had the baby covers.
Oh, the baby covers too, yeah.
Which annoyed the crap out of me. I'm sorry.
This is Al's least favorite topic right now.
Well, wait a minute. I don't know if you guys remember, but back in the 90s, or was it in the 80s, there was Marvel did the gimmicky thing where every cover was just a portrait of the character on the front. It'd be like
it was the 25th anniversary, 1986. Marvel's 25th anniversary. Every issue had just a big portrait, and I think around the edges, it had little small drawings of all the characters.
That was it.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. DC did it too in the 90s. They had the heads.
Yeah,
but it was still done by the creators that were doing the books. You know, the heads.
Right.
And I have somewhere in the garage. I have like a Superman book that came out in the 90s, and it's like I don't know. Don remembers. I don't know if you guys color forms. There were those little like plastic things that you took them out and you slap them onto like a drawing and they move them around. It's just goofy.
Do you remember that?
I don't remember that.
No, color
form.
It's because you guys are
old. They were in the 60s, and what they were, you got them
like stickers or
you
something.
You got it like a little box, like, you know, a paint by numbers kit.
Oh, yeah.
You opened it up and inside they had the cardboard, it was folded out, but it was like another box inside, and it was printed. I had one of Batman when Adam West was on TV, and it had the scene of the city from the opening, you know, animation. had the bat signal, you know, it was all blue and purple and black. And then you had a sheet with these emulsions of plastic of Batman, Robin, you know, different bad guys. And you could peel them off and stick them on that wax background. Yeah. And sometimes you'd have Batman with no arms, and he'd have seven different arms, like, you know, punching and moving.
Okay.
Nice. And I'll tell you, a limited thing, when you're 5 years old, greatest toy in the world. And my cousin had Pinocchio, and she got upset when I tore Geppetto's head off of Geppetto, and I put Pinocchio's head on top of it because I thought it looked cooler. But some of them, you could interchange heads, and all they had color forms for everything.
See, I remember when I was in grade school, my older brother was 10 years older, and he was in high school, and he had a project to do where he had to make like a collage, and he went through my comic book collection, cutting out pictures out of all my books. Oh. So I remember waking up one morning, looking through my old Transformers comics, missing pages or having half pages, and freaking out. Yeah. So maybe he thought he was doing what you were doing.
Yeah, well, I say that it was the wrong thing to do, but we were all little kids, and you know, she used to chew off the army man heads, you know, because she liked to chew things. So
when I was a Brooke kid, still does that. When I was a little kid, unfortunately, back in the '60s, a couple of comic books, I cut out the covers with the, like, say, Iron Man's like coming. I cut them out of the cover and put them on my wall.
Unfortunately, it was tales of like, suspense.
What, one of the funny things?
It was.
Have you seen the people that make the wrapped comic boxes? Where it's got the graphics from the comic books all over the box and everything.
Oh, yeah.
I remember the first time I looked at that thing, I was horrified. I was like, who the hell defiled that many comics to make this thing? Oh, my God. Then I found out that they were making photocopies and printing it.
Oh, that's cool.
I was like, okay, that's cool. That's totally cool now. I'm totally fine with that.
The mailman's stopping in front of my house.
Dallas is so happy now. It's like his favorite thing to watch the mail.
It is. I work from home, and she's coming up. We moved my desk to the front so I can look out the front window of the house, and I can see whenever the mailman shows up. It's great.
Did you guys ever buy comic books at a 7-Eleven or anything?
Oh, ding dong.
There's the doorbell.
I remember buying stuff at the gas stations and the grocery stores.
Oh, you did. Okay.
It was still going on in the 80s.
And the spinner rack and all that stuff.
The spinner racks and stuff. Well, one of the first comic books that I ever bought and collected... I say collected, not really, you know, was a comic book called Shred.
I remember that.
Oh, my gosh. We talked about
Shred before.
Episode 2.
Yeah. So
I had one of those.
I would love to be able to find a collected version of that.
Yeah, I remember. Was that Skateboarder?
Yeah.
I remember.
Because
that.
He was talking about the second episode. I had New Clue, and then when I was putting the blog together, I said, I had that issue. Because Bill Sienkiewicz did the cover, and
like
I liked it.
I
remember reading that.
There's not that many of them.
Yeah, I think there was three, maybe.
While you're looking for pictures there, I just wanted to go back because I got interrupted. I had to go to the door to get the mailman. But
did you get comics?
No, it's... I had to order a solenoid for my sprinkler system. It's nothing fun.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, when I was younger... actually, when I was a teenager, probably, I remember I would buy two copies of every X-Men issue. And then, cool. The second copy, I would cut pictures
out.
I made a huge collage. It was like...
Yep.
I had, I think, three or four big pieces of what's that thick paper?
Poster board.
Thank you. I had like three or four poster boards, and I like made huge collages of old X-Men stuff. You know, I had it on my wall.
That doesn't bother me. I hear some people freak out. You know, and I understand if you just tore it up and did nothing, but if you did something for your own enjoyment, and I mean poster boards on your wall, nothing more awesome than that. You know,
Ellie and I would just like lay on my bed and just like stare up and like say. I would say a phrase, and she'd have to look for it. Stupid stuff like that.
No, that's not stupid. That's awesome. But that's not an issue, and you still have another copy of it. You know, and like I said, most comic books weren't made to survive forever. I mean, when I say that, I try to protect and preserve them, but I don't bag and board them and only touch them with white gloves. I don't keep them in bags and boards, and I've got them to read. Now, if I loan it to somebody and they're not taking care of it, I get mad. But not, you know. Sorry, Rook.
What? What do you mean, sorry? What did you do with my shit?
Rook let me borrow this X-Men Necrotia book like 6 months ago.
Totally forgot about it.
And just yesterday, I remembered that I had it and I quickly, like, I binge read like the first 50 or 60 pages last night, real quick.
Like, as long as you don't lose the 3D glasses in it, you're going to be okay.
What was that, the black dossier?
Oh, yeah. I totally forgot about that. Yeah,
and then I thought, well, I was going to get it, so I ordered another copy. And I got the glasses, and they looked different than what I remembered. It's, oh, man, it's not the same ones.
I didn't even remember that you had it.
Yeah, and then Rook didn't even know. And then I found the glasses, and well, sure enough, they were the same exact glasses. All right, but I'm happy to have it.
I had to do that one time. It wasn't with a book. It was a CD. I was working at the widget factory. Somebody goes, hey, you might want to borrow this. This is a really cool CD. And I'm like, oh, okay, sure. Take it. Walking out. Freaking thing falls on the ground, and it gets scratched up. I go, so I had to go to Amazon and order the damn thing. And it was there in 2 days.
It was probably something to do with money.
You know. You know, this probably doesn't help Don's, like, original image of me being scary. I actually had a guy borrow, the first three Walking Dead hardcovers from me one time.
Was it me?
I remember that. And it was his girlfriend.
He brought it to his girlfriend for her to read. And then he was apparently dating some crackhead. She ended up in jail. And he was afraid to go over to her grandmother's house to get the books for me because he didn't want to have to deal with his grandmother. So I basically told him, I was like, "You listen, you either go get me my books or you owe me money.
Yeah.
And I will get my money one way or another." Yeah, I basically
just as bad as that crackhead.
I put the screws to the kid, and I told him, I was like, "You will give me what is mine or else." Yes. You know,
and rightly so.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was like $100 worth of crap that he had. You know, so.
Oh, yeah.
Did you get them back?
Oh, yeah, I got them back. Yeah.
I was waiting for you to say she sold them.
No, the kid is no longer, you know.
All right, guys, well, we're going to take a second music break, and then we'll be back right after this.
As long as Jimmy Whippetoe girls, he was famous, they believed it. Okay, so he's still working on it. But with a rhyme that's hypnotizing to every woman that he meets. Prince Whipple Whip is back for more whipnotizing. Hey!
Somebody scream! Back in the days, I got paid as a slave. Rappers, they crave for the style I help pay. Feel like a father with my sons and daughters. You hear him rocking and shocking like Daddy Whippers taught him. Now it's time for me, the Prince of MC, to continue Whippers, Whippers world legacy. I'm here spreading the word and letting you know that the slick talking Prince Whipple Whip is on the road again. Keep him in my fame, that's insane, it's not a game. But still there's a few of you new jacks out there needing to be changed. The existence of the title, the MC Prince, has been one of uphill since ever since we back in 78. We were fantastic and great. Every stage I stood upon, I had to dominate. I paid my dues, schooled all these fools, and now your studio made MCs think you rule. You never heard of a rap till after 7 and 9. So when I hear your rhymes now, they kinda remind me of mine. But that's okay, being bold with the fight. It's kinda nice to know that other rappers like what I write. But now I'm back for more, with cuts galore for sure. How could you ignore the fact that I'm back black? Bigger, doper, deafer than ever. Know what? I'm here, girlies, so it's a pleasure. Somebody make some noise in the house. Oh, boy, let me hear what I say. Whipple Whip's gonna rip. I'm not trying to brag, it's just a paid to boast. So bust this. I ain't trying to brag, but I'm paid to boast. So just known throughout the land, my raps are better than most. When I get up on the stage and run my game, rappers bite, imitate, and try to do the thing. They bite my flake, my rhythm, they can't touch the style. It makes me feel great, hey, it makes me smile. Knowing the others are paying attention and watch me coast. There's one thing they never mentioned, they all took notes. Now that skill, something is bad for other rappers to fight. Not every rapper's born with the potential to write. You can rock a fresh rhythm and keep up with the beat. Rock, devastate, and rhyme, never repeat. Play, go with your hands while you stomp with your feet. Do the whip ride, do the funky beat. Moving you down by law, yo, but that's not enough. You gotta be bad, down, dope, rough, tough. But there's a lot of rappers out there trying to be number one. It seems to offer you right where it started from. Boogie Down, Party Town, My Town, Bronx. A crew name, fantastic, star to star. All other MCs, it was plain to see. Every rap that came into it became history. I'm taking juice from the facts, not facts from a tooth. My crew fantastic, got a broken figure, though we use juice. Other rappers, they've been graded, they've been records produced. Got swell headed with the records they produce and try to kill the name. To create the fame, take over the biz, then run the rapping game. Look down upon the crew, in vain and in hate. For the end of fantastic, they all had to wait. The crew is gone, but the name is still there. In videos and movies everywhere. Now there's one thing that I'm a switching. So won't you pay attention? We was going so
solo, I'm taking vengeance. Yo, I'm done to battle anybody come and battle with me. Come take a chance with the prince of all MC. Why me? The W-H-I-P. I'm a legend in rapping history and I'm back for more. Guts galore for sure. How could you ignore the fact that I'm back? Black, bigger, better, double, deafer than ever. Yo, Prince of MCs is here, so what's the pleasure? Throw your hands in the air, come on. Wave them like I just don't care. Say, throw your hands in the air, come on. Wave them like I just don't care. Let me hear you say, ah, with a little louder, say, ah, with. Let me hear you say, Zulu. Say, Zulu. Peace to the mighty Zulu nation. I keep peace, Prince Whipper. And we out of here.
And we're back.
That was Prince Whipper-Whip. I served with him on the Kitty Hawk in 83 to 85, and he's going to be really big. Anyway, we'll have a link to the blog. Hope you enjoyed it.
Hey, everybody. Mel's here. Say hi, Mel.
Hi, Mel.
All right.
With her awesome Darth Vader sweater.
Yeah. That is pretty sweet.
And hey.
Nice.
I like your style, dude. All right. So, okay, we're back. This episode's obviously running a little long, but it's because it's our 150th, so... We had some good conversations. Do we actually want to talk about some physical comics before we wrap it up?
Yes, we might as well.
All right, what do you got, kids?
I made Dallas read this. I'm not a good friend because I make Dallas read books that I like.
He does all the time, and he's 6'6", as he likes to point out, so I don't have a choice.
But
well, it's because you're tiny.
It is. Big spirit.
What, did somebody forget to finish this book?
No, oh, my God. So Don lends me
I knew that would annoy him if I said that.
Don lends me a single random issue of Fantastic Four from, like, the 80s. It was a Walt Simonson issue, so I can understand why he likes it so much, okay?
But Walt Simonson is one of my favorite creators, and as I said in an earlier episode, I love Walt Simonson's Thor, among other things.
I hate the way they drew the thing.
But,
uh-oh.
Well, what was happening...
Oh, there's going to be a fisticuffs.
No. I was reading the Fantastic Four randomly. I just pick up an issue, and they had different creators. But they were mutating the Thing. I never really paid much attention, but I didn't like it either, but I really didn't care. But Walt Simonson came on and wrote and drew the issues. I don't think he inked all of them, and they were kind of random. Sometimes he just wrote them and somebody else would draw one, and I wasn't really buying them. But I walked in, I bought that, of all places, at Walmart. And, it just said it was a really bizarre book, and it was about Mr. Fantastic, Reed Richards, and Dr. Doom using these time jump backpack harnesses. And I just thought, it was the most unique storytelling I think I'd ever read. And as soon as I read that, I went and found all the back issues, which weren't as good as this. Anyway, I found this in a dollar box, and I made Dallas read it.
So it was fun, and the thing... So, like you said, Reed and... And Victor are jumping back and forth through time by minute. So, like, they'll jump 4 minutes ahead of time and then 7 minutes in the back or whatever. So the way it's visually shown, like Rook was saying, it looks unfinished because it's in black and white.
Yeah, I understand it now.
The rest of the story explained. Is all in color. So,
but I still hate the way the Thing looks.
Well, that's they've been, other people have been doing it.
Yeah.
So it was cool. It was fun. I enjoyed it.
Well, you know what it actually looks like to me? Do you remember the character Abomination?
Yes.
Yeah, they, it looks like somebody had been drawing the Abomination too much and forgot that they were supposed to draw the Thing. Well, Abomination was in one of the horrible Hulk movies.
Hulk.
The Abomination.
Oh, he was in the Ed Norton one.
Yeah, the Edward Norton one.
That right. Character, when I was a kid, scared me to death.
He has rock suspenders.
He has rock suspenders and
who doesn't?
Brick ears.
Yeah, well, they made a brim that going around his head. It was, I think that was
gangsta. I don't know what you guys are talking
I think
about.
It was Keith Pollard.
That's his bling.
It's his bling.
We're going to have to post a picture of this Thing.
I think it was Keith Pollard that was designing that. And,
yeah, that's a good one.
And they even talk sometimes of some of the issues that he was mutating more and more and more. But yeah, I didn't care for that one either. But I mean, you can't like everything. And I wasn't really reading too many Marvels at the time. But I really always loved this issue. And it just is unique. It wasn't the best Walt Simonson artwork. But the story really sold it. And I was talking to a friend of mine. And he said that it, by this time, Walt Simonson was just thinking of himself mostly as an idea man. And a lot of his work...
Well, that's
was,
a hell of an idea.
Yeah. And his work was kind of shorthand. It's changed now when he draws. He draws like he always did, really heavily rendered, and he puts a lot into it. But that single issue has always been something I've always loved. Right. And I seem to be the only one at the table that feels that way.
Hey, I read it.
Well, thanks for that.
No, it was good. I appreciate you showing it to me. I loved that idea. I'm not a huge fan of Simonson's art, and you already know that. The execution's pretty good, and the idea is fantastic.
There you go.
There you go.
It's fantastic. What you got, rookie baby?
I wanted to talk. I think I've talked about this once before already, haven't I? Super Zero?
I've heard the name, but I don't know if you did.
With
I don't remember.
Amanda Connor and Jimmy Palmiotti. Thank you. I always screw that up. Issue 2 and 3 are out. A fun book. I'm really just having a lot of fun reading this book, and I really want to recommend it once again. You know, it's the whole entire concept of the book is that the girl is trying to get superpowers, and she's doing some of the dumbest shit in order to try and do it. Issue 2, she gets bitten by radioactive spiders, and I'm laughing.
That's why she got all the spots on.
Yeah, you really have to read the book to understand why I'm laughing, because she tries to get like an X-ray or something, and she, you know, figures that the radioactivity will irradiate the spiders that or the ants and releases them onto herself while she's getting X-rayed. She tried to create her own origin story by having a bum mug her parents.
Awesome.
Yeah, it is. I'm telling you. And, you know, I was listening to somebody else on another podcast talk about this series, and they're like, it's so wordy. But you know what?
Wordy.
Well, the first issue, there's a lot of writing, a lot of reading and script.
Isn't that what a comic book is? What's that words?
It's mostly pictures.
I think it's more than most people are used to in a comic, but it has its place. I mean, it has its reasoning for having so much dialogue and thought, you know, build up for it.
I kind of want to check it out now, just the way you explained it. It's hilarious.
Oh, it absolutely is. And of course, it takes place here in Tampa.
They live around here, right?
Yeah. Jimmy and Amanda, they live in Florida.
So are there real places, real locations?
Yes. Yeah. Nice. Yeah, there's some real places. I'd let you thumb through one, but it's autographed.
I almost opened it, and then I saw that it was autographed. Yeah, the cover number three?
Number three.
The cover's great because she's running around with like a bunch of weapons, and she's accidentally
just kicking her own ass.
She's beating herself up.
Wow. So, but yeah, you can pick it up, you know, at your local comic book shop, Amazon, and definitely at Yancey Street. This is from Aftershock Comics. Check them out.
Nice.
If you don't mind, I'd like you to talk about the book underneath that. And I'm sorry to jump on.
Dallas just gave me that. I haven't even read this.
Yeah, this is just the second copy I have of something.
Love and Rockets collection, Poison River. Gave it to me today.
You're not going to talk about that on any other show unless I'm on it, right?
No, yeah. I wasn't a big fan of that later Love and or the Poison River era of Love and Rockets stuff.
You got the look.
You do remember he's 6'6", right? You don't say stuff like that to him.
I love Love and Rockets, and I love the Power
That's the... I never watched the Fifth Element look.
He's never seen the Fifth Element. What? He's never seen the Fifth Element.
Smack him in the back of the head.
Seriously, Lilo Dallas, multipass.
I've never seen Jaws.
Multipass?
Have you never seen Jaws?
Because I've seen bits and
pieces. Can't believe it.
You've seen Star Wars, right?
Yes, and the first night at the drive-in.
Okay.
I've never seen The Godfather.
Did you listen to the last episode? Because he talks about Star Wars, and I'm like, oh my God. But, all right. I'm going to say this before Rook reads it. I read Poison River. It started out like the greatest story I ever read in a single issue, that one segment. I thought, because he could do no wrong. Gilbert Hernandez, everything he did was always just absolutely on the money, and that was the strongest opening, and I couldn't wait. And then what happened to it after that, I don't know what happened to him. So we are in agreement.
I feel like it meandered.
Yeah, well, what happened was him and his brother were trying to do longer form stories, and Jaime was doing a story called Love and Rockets. And I think when they put it out in a book like that, it's called Love and Rockets X. And they went on forever. And, I mean, I read them and liked them. They weren't their better ones. And later in the interview, they talked about it, saying that the longer form stories didn't really work for them so well. But, yeah, it could have been one of the greatest stories I ever read. But, like I said, that first chapter, it was staggering. And then after that, it kind of came down. So, even though I gave you the look, I kind of agree with you.
Who else has got something?
I'm done.
You don't have anything?
No,
what's
man.
That pile? What's that stack
there? I haven't read any of them yet.
Oh.
And Nailbiter. I haven't read any of them.
Hash Browns, what do you got?
Billy. He's got nothing.
Yeah, again, I was given this today, so...
So I think it's a good time to end.
Anticlimactic ending.
I don't know, wow, we really fizzled out, guys.
No, I got...
All right, wait.
Go,
what
here
is... What, Valhalla Mad?
I'll be honest with you.
Ooh, Black Science!
I bought these out of a dollar box, and I read them and liked them, want to talk about them. I said, I want to wait till we're all on it, and that was so long ago that I kind of forgot what I read. So,
okay, well, how about you reread these and we talk about them next episode? But,
yeah.
They're pretty good. Which one are you holding, Dallas?
Captara?
Yeah, that was pretty good. That's one of those Mark Millar books, or Miller, however he says
Millar,
the name.
Millar.
But,
Mr. I Can't Finish a Book on Time.
I never particularly cared for his stories too much. Now, Dallas lent me something way back with those...
The Authority, right?
Yeah.
Some of the old Authority.
And he wrote that one, right, that you had, right? And that was pretty good. And not enough for him to go run out and buy it. But after he did Starlight, which I absolutely loved, I said, this is good. And I found that in the dollar box. It's a time travel agency. And it's about two partners. One of them... You know, it reminds me of a 70s kind of Starsky and Hutch type show where one guy's kind of serious and the other guy's kind of happy-go-lucky. And they go back in this time travel to do something, and something happens, and one guy dies, and the whole world changes.
Oh, Guy Davis.
And I thought, well, that's actually kind of neat. I've never seen another issue, but I liked it.
I do want to recommend, I see you have an issue of Black Science in there. That's a fantastic book. I think it's written by Rick Remender.
Yeah, so, it is.
For anybody out there that likes sci-fi, fantastic book.
It awesome. Is, and it's got a lot of monkeys in it.
The art is. Don't all good books?
Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, I did like it.
The art's incredible.
It is incredible, and incredible. It reminds me of that one you lent me, Rook, Surrogates, which I ended up buying.
Oh, yes.
And it reminds me a lot of that, and it was good, except that I've only got one issue, and I have no idea. I like how it's laid out. I just couldn't tell exactly what else was going on. And Neverman, that's Guy Davis. I like the cover, like the logo. I like the whole idea of it, and yet I don't remember much about it.
these are like
Dick Tracy.
Really in-depth. I was thinking The Shadow.
Well, we're
yeah,
kind
it looks
of
like
in,
The Shadow. Look, the
very in-depth book reviews on this episode.
So I'm going to say next time, don't wait so long before you guys join the show so I remember what I read.
Hey, screw you, buddy. Right, I want to thank you guys for joining me today. Hash Browns, we're going to miss you, buddy.
Yeah, we'll miss you guys, too.
Thanks for your origin story.
Yeah, thanks for your origin story.
My origin story has begun.
That was glorious. The legend begins.
All right, and thank you everyone for listening. I hope you had a great time on our 150th episode. We'll have another episode out in about a week or so. So until then, take care of yourselves and
read more comics.
Bye, Billy.
You can find Al's other podcast, Slow Robot A Go Go, Dallas's webcomic, The Mighty Blue, and Al's blog, Destination Nightmare, on the sidebar of our blog at bunchofdorks.com.
And click on the Cyclops.